This is side one, tape one of session one of an interview with Captain Vernice. That's V as in Victor, E-R-N-I-C-E, initial G, last name Armour, A-R-M-O-U-R, which is being conducted on the 3rd of September at Louisville, Kentucky, and the interviewer is Colonel Eleanor Wilson.
My name is Bernice Gwendolyn Armour, and I was born in Chicago, Illinois. I lived there the first 3 years of my life until my parents divorced on September 22nd, 1973. 11:15 a.m., my mom's favorite soap opera was on. And so after that, my brother and I, he was born 16 months after me on January 14th, 1975. And we moved down to Memphis, Tennessee with my grandmother. And a couple years after that, my mom was reunited, I should say, with my, who was to be my stepfather, Clarence Jackson, who was a former Marine for 13 years. He served two tours in Vietnam as a crew chief on a 46. Which is where I got my first introduction to the Marine Corps. We moved out to California, and out there, 1978, 79, and we moved quite a few times, but settled for the most part in Mira Loma, California, which is in Riverside County, and that's where I got my first horse and developed my love for horses. And backtracking a little bit, at the age of 3 is the first introduction to horses as far as seeing them in Chicago. And from there, I developed the passion of wanting to be a police officer and ride a horse downtown, mounted patrol. So we moved from California in 1981, 1982, somewhere in there. I was in fourth grade, picked up with fourth grade in Memphis, Tennessee at Hanley Elementary. Went to middle school. We moved out to the country. My grandmother lived in the city at that point. And we still had a couple horses, got another horse, so continued my little riding career. And at that point, I also got interested in bodybuilding and working out, even though my mom wouldn't let me do it. My brothers were all in football and everything. And when a couple of them left and went off to college, they left the weights in the garage. So I got the bright idea of getting all those weights, taking them up to my room and building my own gym. A week later, when my mom saw them, she was like, "Get those weights out of here. What are you doing?" So graduated from Overton High School, John Overton High School, Creative and Performing Arts, where I played in Memphis, Tennessee. Played the flute and trombone, and I graduated in June of 1991. But while there, I played the flute. Trombone was my primary instrument, and my first year in college, I actually went there on a music scholarship. The trombone. I played in the Memphis Youth Symphony as the bass trombonist, All-State Jazz Band, All-State Orchestra, All-State Band. So I was pretty into my music. And after I graduated in 91, I moved off to college and went to Middle Tennessee State University, located in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. It's about 23 miles southeast of Nashville. After I decided I didn't want to be a starving artist on the corner playing my trombone with the case open asking for money, I was actually majoring in animal science, emphasis in horse science, because I wanted to train and breed horses. But I decided to change from that and go after what my real passion, or more of a passion, I should say, which was actually bodybuilding and working out. So I changed my major from animal science, emphasis in horse science, to physical education with an emphasis in exercise science. So it was actually a non-teaching major. I could do things like that, be a personal trainer, work in the gym, administration in a gym, things like that. While in school, I was freshman, you don't do that much as far as traveling goes. Didn't have that much money because I didn't have a job. I was putting myself through school. My parents didn't have the money to send me to college. So student loans and grants were paying my way. And the ROTC unit there on campus was advertising a trip to New Orleans during Mardi Gras. Now the catch was you had to be on the rifle team to go down there. So I said, I can twirl a rifle. So I joined up with the team. We went down to Mardi Gras. And I discovered that I really, really liked the military environment. Now my father, Gaston Armour, he still lived in Chicago, Illinois, and he was a retired major out of the Army Reserves. So I had military really on from two fronts, my dad and my stepdad, one in the Army and one in the Marines. So after my interest with the drill team, I had a great time when we went down to Mardi Gras, came back in the fall of 93, January 4th, 1993 was my first day at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, right at Columbia. January 4th, 1993. I enlisted in the Army Reserves. I was private armor. And my specialty was accounting. Accounting specialist, because I wanted to get out and help people do taxes during the tax season, thought I could make some extra money. Little did I know accounting classifications in the Army had nothing to do with real world taxes. So the recruiter got me, and I didn't even get student loan repayment, like I thought. Fort Jackson was where I went through basic training, and then I went up to Fort Benjamin Harrison for AIT, Advanced Individual Training, for accounting specialist. After that, I returned back to Nashville and joined my reserve unit. And honestly, I can't remember the name of that unit. I can get that information. And I drilled with them on the weekends. Went to summer school to catch up on the classes that I missed. And I think about a year after that, I joined or got involved with the ROTC program. I decided not to take the scholarship option because I wanted to have the option to say yes, I want to do it, or no, I don't, or, you know, just the decision factors at the end. And if you take the money, you have to go, or you have to pay back all the money. And I also wanted to drill with my unit as a cadet. So I decided to take the cadet option and get paid as a cadet in my unit by the scholarship avenue. In 1996, January, I left Murfreesboro, Tennessee to go to Columbus, Ohio for my internship and my exercise science degree. I had to do a semester working in the gym, so I decided to go hang out with one of my buds who lived up in Columbus, work in the gym up there, just to do something different. While up there, I got a notice in the mail that told me the civil service test that I'd taken about a year ago had been processed, and a police academy class was coming up, and they wanted me to test for the police academy. Now, I'd gone and taken the civil service test because my dream as a child had always been to be a police officer and ride a horse downtown. That desire was still alive and well, and that was my single one goal right there, was to be a police officer. So when I got this notice, I was elated until I got to the bottom of it, and they said, yep, the test is on March 6th, and it was already March 12th. So I'm bummed out, going through all the rest of my mail that I just had sent to me, and I get to another notice that says there's another test on March 23rd, or sometime, I'm not even sure about that exact date, but it was after. So a week later, so I jumped in the car with a bud of mine, and we rode down to Nashville, and I took all the tests that were required. Passed everything, passed the physical, passed the psychological, and in June of 1996, actually I went down after taking that test, and when I found out I made it, when I got back to Nashville, I still didn't have a job, so I got on with the Sheriff's Department. So I actually went through Sheriff's Academy for 5 weeks and then started working in jails. And about a week after I was in the jail, Police Academy started up in June of 96. So I got to work on the Sheriff's Department for a little while. So June of 96 is when I started. It was a six-month academy, and I graduated in December of 1996 as a police officer for Nashville, Davidson County Metropolitan. That was pretty awesome. One of two of the proudest days of my life was graduating that night. I was ready to go out and hit the streets right then, but I was pissed off because I was one of the few people that actually had Saturday and Sunday off. Because their training officer was senior and he had Saturday and Sunday off. So Monday, hit the streets and went to work. Absolutely awesome. Had a great time as a Nashville police officer. Ended up riding with the motorcycle squad, traffic. First black female to serve on that, second female period to be on the squad. Great group of guys. So I didn't get to ride horses downtown, unless you call a motorcycle steel horse. If that counts, because Nashville was still in the process of standing up their equestrian section, so it wasn't even an option. I'd always wanted to move back out to California after living out there as a kid, so I had the opportunity to move to Phoenix, Arizona, and moved out there in March of 1998. Went through another police academy with the Tempe Police Department there in Arizona. Worked on the department for a little while, and in September of 1998, the biggest decision that has impacted my life, I think, so far. While going through school and all those days in the student union and going across the courtyard and hanging out with all the other students, one morning I was walking through the basement of the student union and I saw a Marine recruiter down there at the table. Well, because I wanted to be a police officer and I was already in Army ROTC, really wasn't looking for information as far as how do I get in from that recruiter, but he definitely piqued my interest. And I ended up going to see the OSO, which is the officer selection officer for the Marine Corps. And while I told him about my experiences with Army ROTC, one of which, I was at Fort Bragg in 1994, and when you're in the Army, you have to have a battle buddy. You can't go anywhere by yourself. So I had a battle buddy. She was an aviation contract. She was going to be a pilot. Me, I wanted to be a police officer, so I was looking at the MPs and all that other stuff. It was career day. And we were in this big field. A bunch of static displays were set up for all the different MOSs. And after I went over to the MPs and a couple other cool displays that I was thinking about, she decided, hey, it's time to go to the aviation tent. I was like, all right, let's go. Went into the aviation tent. It's dim. It's a GP medium. It's hot. Like, you know, signs are rolled up, dust flying everywhere. And as my eyes adjust to the front, I see a black female in a flight suit. Man, why didn't I think of that? And here it is, my battle buddy, female, is already on her way to becoming a pilot and didn't even, you know, cross my mind. But when I saw that black woman in a flight suit up there at the front of that tent, it did something. And when that Marine recruiter asked me if I'd ever thought of aviation, I was like, absolutely. I didn't finish completing my flight physical with the Army, so when it came down to deciding what branch you were going to go into, I was assessed ordnance branch. But things with ROTC, you know, I just decided to be police officer and didn't go the Army route. So when I was speaking with the Marine recruiter, I said, yeah, I'm definitely interested in aviation. So sat me down, I took the aviation test, didn't pass it the first time, studied a little more, passed it the second time, personally drove me down to Pensacola, Florida to get my flight physical done, and I passed that with flying colors. But at this point, still going through school, took time off to be a police officer, so that took me out of any available programs. Because the first time when my package went up, they didn't decide till the last minute, I think the day before, that I could go to OCS, and the OSO just didn't think it would be fair to me and give me a fair shot to do well at OCS. So the second time when I was ready to submit my package, I wasn't enrolled in college, but I wasn't graduated either. I hadn't graduated. So I was kind of in that middle area where I couldn't do OCC, which is Officer Candidates Course. I couldn't do PLC, which was Platoon Leaders Course, which is while you're enrolled in college. So I was kind of in that limbo gray area where I had to either be fully enrolled or graduated, and I was neither. So continued on with my police officer career. Finally graduated from college, had moved out to Tempe, get this notice in the mail from a Marine recruiter, and I'm looking at the card. So I give that recruiter in Nashville a call and say, hey, how much time do I have left on my flight physical? And if I'm thinking about joining the Marine Corps, what do I need to do? And he said, well, you're coming up on your two-year limitation. And if you're going to do it, you have to do it now. Otherwise, your physical is going to expire and you'd have to go through everything all over again. So, in that September, I decided to leave the career of being a police officer. Because there was a guy, and I was 98. There was a guy in my police academy class, 55 years old. We called him Pappy, retired Army pilot. So I said, I can always be a cop, but I can't always be a Marine Corps officer and a naval aviator. So packed up all my stuff, drove cross country, and October 4th, 1998 was my first day at Officer Candidate School in Quantico, Virginia. That first night after pickup and the C-bag drag and all of that stuff, after the sergeant instructors get you, I'm laying in the bed, in the rack, at position of attention with this big, huge grin on my face looking at the ceiling. So it was pretty awesome. And that was the start of my Marine Corps career. So the night before I check in OCS, I stay at that hotel that probably many candidates stayed at, the one that's right outside the front gate, right there on the left side, Best Value or something like that. I think I slept all of maybe 20 minutes between waking up and or opening my eyes and looking at the clock every 5 seconds. Because I was like the kid the night before Christmas, couldn't get any sleep. Drive over, check in, get my gear issue, and you're in reception battalion, I think, the first 2 or 3 days, and you're going through medical and doing all your checks, and of course you have to do the weigh-in. And I believe my maximum weight was 151, and I was told that if you're an ounce over, they send you back. And I was 153, and I was scared to death. Like, oh my God, I made it all the way here and I'm over. But there are actually several of us that were over, and they signed us up and we were good. So didn't have any problems there. After they get all the candidates ready and you're sitting in this big classroom and you're getting ready to be introduced to your sergeant instructors, you're all sitting there at the table with your canteens full of water with your hands folded in front of you, sitting at the position of attention that you've been taught over the last couple days. And all of a sudden, after the CO of OCS has finished speaking and has introduced the sergeant instructor, all hell breaks loose. And they're screaming and yelling and running up and down the aisles, jumping on tables. And one actually jumped on our table, and then the table fell. And she kind of, so, you know, that was, you were just too scared to laugh, though. So you're running there like, get out, get out, get out the doors. So you're running out the side of the doors, and you already have your bag staged, and you run, and you go stand by your bags at the position of attention. And now they're ready to do the C-bag drag, and that's where you take your bags and everything and all the gear that you've been issued over the last couple days, And for all those women who thought they couldn't get along without the hair dryers and the makeup and the 20 outfits, they have to carry their bags as well. So that was pretty hilarious. And right now, everybody has those roller bags. Well, back in 1998, I had a roller bag. And I think I was the only one that had a roller bag. So we're running across the parade deck, and I probably missed out on some of the psychological warfare on that one, because I was actually doing pretty cool with my roller bag. I had everything else I had thrown on top of my roller bag, and I was scooting along. So some of the other women that had problems, I helped them and got some of their stuff and threw it on top of the roller bag, too. So it was pretty funny. We got to the other side, and all the gear that you had or you thought you had was mixed in with everybody else's that they had or thought they had, and just a hodgepodge of everything while the sergeant instructors are looking for contraband. And after all of that, you rushed off to the squad bay, and you're starting to mark all your gear. And the uniforms we had were just the cami, you know, just regular camouflage, so the woodland camis. And this was before digital. So you marked all your gear. Well, you thought you were going to mark all your gear. You might have had one sock marked by the time they say, okay, you're finished with your socks. Get your t-shirts. And you halfway marked the t-shirt and probably spelled your name wrong. It was interesting. And people, you know, they kind of try to warn you about OCS and what's going to happen. So I knew the showers were coming up. So I had my plan. I was going to walk in there, half soap up, wash off, just get the pertinent areas, and I was going to be done in 15 seconds. Well, we're all standing there, no clothes on, port side, starboard side, ready to march through the showers. I go in, get in there, throwing the soap in my hand, and next thing I know, the sergeant instructor's grabbing you, pulling you out. I was like, wait a minute. So my plan didn't work. Thought I had it all planned out. They were smarter than I was. And she's in the shower. And obviously, some of the women didn't get the gouge because they were in there full soap and couldn't believe it when the sergeant instructor came in there to grab them out. But I'm not rinsed off yet. They didn't have it. They were already trying to talk back and say stuff, and I just ran out and dried off. And that was day one. So we're standing at the wall lockers. They're giving us our instructions for the night. Climb into the rack. I pick the top bunk. You have to lay there at the position of attention until they tell you to adjust, and you're free to sleep however you want. Me, I'm on top of the covers. I wasn't even getting under that blanket after I'd made that bed up. And just had the hugest grin on my face thinking that this is absolutely awesome. And I was on my way to becoming a United States Marine. So through the days to follow of training and learning what it was to be in a military environment, we got up at 4:30 in the morning. Rushed and brushed your teeth, combed your hair, did all the daily hygiene. For me, I was lucky. I have a short haircut, so I didn't have too much to bother with. We didn't iron our uniforms or anything like that because we probably had old dirt in them and everything anyway. But, you know, you washed all your gear. They actually had two washers and two dryers up in the squad bay, so I'm sure that was quite different from days past. But we did have that. You got up, did your hygiene, went to PT, which is physical training, and you'd run the trails back at OCS. They'd also instituted circuit training at this time where they had weights around the field, and you'd do different weight training exercises and dips, and the women would do the flexed arm hang where the guys were doing the pull-ups, and we'd do different calisthenics and the rope climb and the fireman's carry, and that's where you grab your buddy and you throw him over your shoulder and you carry him for a distance. And it would be switched up. So some days we do that whole circuit course around the big field, and other days we do the runs out in back of OCS. Me, I wasn't that stellar of a runner. I was one of the turtles, so I was always in the back, breathing hard, trying to keep up with the pack. But I honestly have to say the Marine Corps put me into shape. Army, I was a turtle when I started. I was a turtle when I finished. But my initial PFT was a 30-minute, 11-second 3-mile. The day I graduated, I ran a 23:30, and I felt like I could run forever, and I was 143 pounds. So it was absolutely amazing and awesome hard, gut-wrenching experience, but absolutely paid off. And at the end of that, you knew how to march around, you knew how to drill, you knew how to eat very fast, you knew how to survive, basically. And the transformation that I saw in a lot of those females was awesome. You were looking at a woman who'd never been yelled at in her life and couldn't believe she was being yelled at, to seeing a self-sufficient individual who could take care of her stuff and her gear and get where she needed to go. So it was pretty awesome. Now, just to hit a little bit of the training a little more in depth, women at this point were definitely carrying rifles, and we were doing everything that the males were doing. So we learned how to drill with the rifles. We learned how to do all the maneuvers with the rifles. You learned the safety, how to handle the rifle, how to clean it, tear it apart, put it back together, inspection arms, everything and anything to do with the M16 A1, you knew how to do it. And I believe we might have even had the M16 A2 at this point. Now, to go along with the rifle, you had to learn the tactics on how am I going to use this rifle now that I have it. And in officer candidate school, you don't learn to shoot. So during the exercises, you know, you use blanks, and which are, you know, they give you the popping sound that the bullet would make, even though there's no live bullet that comes out. And you learn squad tactics at the officer candidate level. And each officer candidate gets a chance to be in a leadership position. Now, officer candidate school is separated male and female, so all the women are doing everything at this point, from being the members in the platoon and the company to being the sergeant or the platoon sergeant or the platoon commander, the candidate platoon commander, of course. And you're put in that leadership role where you have to make the decision for those women that are there with you, marching you to chow, marching you to classes. Well, what are you supposed to be doing while you're waiting in line? I was actually the company XO. Kind of at the beginning, and the actual XO of the company says, okay, well, what are you going to do while you all have this idle time while you're just waiting in the chow line? And I was actually the first one to implement taking pages out of your book with you to study with you while you're in the chow line. So that was kind of neat, just looking back on that. And I'm sure it's the same with every cycle. You know, they try to lead you down a certain path. But why we hadn't thought of studying while we're just sitting around waiting in our idle time, you know, it's just a socialization process, really just getting you into the mindset of initiative, thinking about things and trying to get where you need to be without being led. It really is the leadership course where you're learning to be innovative and think of things. So you get the training with the rifle as far as just the mechanics of it. You get the training on being a leadership, just the learning process. The learning curve is so steep there on not being just a nasty civilian walking around waiting for your boss to tell you what to do and yelling at you if you're late, to hey, I'm going to be a leader of Marines, and how do I lead them the most efficiently or productively, safe way that you can. So by the end, you're doing your SULI or your war or the crucible now is what it's called. 3 days where you really don't get that much sleep, and you're just going the entire time. And it's just a leadership, nonstop leadership 3 days, if you will. And everyone rotates through leadership billets during those 3 days. It's very, very, very physically demanding. You sleep outside in your sleeping bags. No tents or anything like that. You eat MREs for all your meals. You carry those around in your cargo packets and in your pack. And you're going on your forced marches that you've been building up during OCS. And the last one, I believe, was 8 to 10 miles, something like that, 13 miles. It was pretty lengthy. And at the end of all that, when you're running back and forth to the LRC, which is the Leadership Reaction Course, where your platoon, or excuse me, your squad at that point, or your fire team, works together to get through an obstacle. So you look at something and it's a wall with two pieces of string, but you have to make them work to get from one side to the other, and there's a 10-foot pond of water in front of you. You have to think about how are you going to get through this course. And you do that twice in the day in between the squad tactics. So you go from the squad tactic training area to the LRC, and that was about a mile and a half, and you had to run the whole way. So between running from the training area to the LRC and back and doing it a couple times in a day, it's really a drain on you physically, and you're really pulling from your gut. And all the women are there for each other, helping each other, encouraging each other, saying you can do it, and carrying gear if that was needed, pushing someone up the hill if that was needed. Just the camaraderie and the bonding was absolutely amazing. And the best part is we were doing everything the males were doing. They were running the exact same distance. They were doing the exact same obstacles. They were doing the exact same reaction courses with the squad tactics. So they couldn't say that they were doing anything that we weren't, because we were all doing the same things. And that really sums it up for training. So I graduated from Officer Candidate School with both sets of parents there in 1998, December 12th. And we marched across the parade deck. Actually, it was very cold that day. And, you know, after you've been ironing on these camis for about a month straight, after you receive them back with your name tape sewn on them, the sergeant instructors actually came to us and let us make a decision. Hey, do you want to wear your camis, or do you want to wear your field jacket because it's cold outside on top of your camis? And everybody said, no, we don't want to wear a field jacket. You know, they wanted to show off these camis that we've been ironing for a month with the starch and everything else with U.S. Marines and our name on them. And we got out there and we marched across that parade deck, and I actually graduated as the platoon sergeant, number two in my class. And I tell you, I was so proud walking across that parade deck with U.S. Marine. It was awesome. So since I had the great opportunity of graduating December 12th, if you know, that is right before Christmas, we got basket leave, and didn't have to report to the basic school until the first or second week of January, which was absolutely awesome. Got to go home, hang with the family, eat my mom's southern cooking, which is southern fried chicken, fried pork chops, fried corn, fried okra, fried shrimp, anything fried, you can get it. Bubba Gump had some. So it was awesome, and my mom spoiled me to death because everybody said I was skinny, and I've never been called that in my life. So that was absolutely amazing, and it was just the best feeling in the world when you're walking around saying, yeah, I'm a Marine. So it was awesome. And during Officer Candidate School, you go through some training called Kugel Sticks, and that's where you have this thing that looks like a huge Q-tip with pads on the end of it, and you have protective gear on with helmets. And during that, I went up against a female, and unfortunately, when I hit her, butt stroke to the head, after she tried to slice me up, unfortunately, she had a skull fracture. But the guys at the basic school, TBS, heard about this, and that was all they needed to make me a platoon commander. They're like, hey, we want you as a platoon commander in the company. So right out the chute, came and got me and said, Armor, you're going to be the platoon commander for 1st Platoon. So that was an awesome, unique opportunity, because the 1st Platoon commander is the platoon commander for an entire month while the company is trying to get everything going. You get the lieutenants going in the right direction. You're getting classes all set up. Just getting into the swing of things, they want a little continuity. And the regular length for a platoon commander is 2 weeks. So right there, starting out from the get-go, all these guys have a female platoon commander. And I didn't even think about it. You know, yeah, I'm a chick. I've been a chick for, you know, 32 years. So it's normal for me. I wake up, I'm a woman. I go to sleep, I'm a woman. It's not a big deal. And I really don't even think I thought about it then too much. But, you know, I'm a double minority. I'm black as well. So just thinking about it right now, I probably have no idea the impact that that had on those guys that worked immediately with me, seeing not only a female, or not only a black, but a black female leading them, and this first experience for all of us, and the training of becoming a Marine leader. We went to the rifle range, marching every day up Appalachian Trail and Cardiac Hill, and the instructors of our platoons, and we learned the marksmanship and the tradition of shooting as a Marine rifleman, because that's the whole core of the basic school. Every Marine a rifleman. That's why every Marine, no matter what your MOS, your military occupational specialty is, everyone has to go, every officer goes through the basic school. So we learned how to shoot the rifle. We learned how to shoot the pistol. You go through not just squad tactics now, but platoon and company level tactics. It's all building blocks. In the basic school, you spend a lot of time out in what we call out in the field, which is out in the woods, out in the dirt, getting dirty, brushing your teeth. Some guys didn't. using the bathroom in the woods, you know, so you have men and women now, you're integrated, you're all in a company together, and I know that's quite different than how it started out. We didn't have any classes where you learn to put on makeup or put on pantyhose or anything like that. Again, we're doing all the training that the men were doing. When we went on forced marches, people like to call them humps, when you went on a hump, the men were right there with the women. And since you were separated in officer candidate school and now you're together, you do have to stick with the ideal that was instilled in you when you were at officer candidate school, that, hey, you can do this. You don't depend on others to carry your crap. So sometimes when, you know, some of the females would, you know, be feigning female is what I call it, and the guys like trying to pull their gear, you know, you have to pull them aside and, hey, what are you doing? We worked hard for what we have right now and the respect we have right now. And that woman at that point did have respect, but she was losing it by having these guys try to, you know, tote all their crap. And really, they didn't like doing it. They're just trying to keep their platoon in the game, and they were actually being, you know, becoming resentful that they had to carry someone else's stuff. So, you know, leadership is there inside of the company, but you also had to look at it inside the core of the women that were there. So with the basic school, you know, I was already on a flight contract because when I got with the recruiter, you know, I did my all my flight stuff. So when I signed on the dotted line, I had a guaranteed contract to go to flight school. You don't have that attitude that I'm a flight contract, that I don't have to work hard or anything. That was the urban legend that went around. But if anything, aviators are pretty competitive, so you worked pretty hard too, you know, and did your best to get through everything. And through the days and the weeks that you spent out in the field and the classroom time and, you know, all the training, when you came back, it all came together. And at the end of TBS, you had what we called the war. And that was 7 days out in the field where you learned everything that was given to you or that was taught to you or that you picked up, the learning lessons through that entire 6 months of TBS. You put it to practice out there in the field, in the offense and the defense, patrolling, searching the searching for the enemy, you know, reconnaissance by fire, support by fire, company assault. And they'd also instituted MOUT training, which was urban training in the city, clearing rooms, clearing buildings. And little did we know how much that training would come into play several years later with everything that's going on in Iraq now. But the vision and the foresight was there, and we came out victorious in the war at the end of TBS, and we were now second lieutenants, ready to face the world with enough power to wreak some havoc and enough knowledge to get us yelled at by the gunnies. We graduated, ooh, I should remember that, remember OCS, but it was June 19th, I believe, of 1999, I was in Bravo Company. So after graduating from basic school in June, everybody drives away and they try to avoid looking in a rearview mirror. Well, I was no different. Parents and family all came up for that graduation as well. I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to work in HMX-1, which is the President's Helicopter Squadron. Everywhere the President goes, HMX-1 goes as well, and that's anywhere in the world. He pretty much has his own little Marine Corps, MPs, working dogs, and the Marine Corps works hand-in-hand with the Air Force with this squadron, because when he flies to another country, of course he flies on Air Force One, but all the helos are flown over there, so when he flies to different cities in that country, he actually flies on Marine One, or the Marine aircraft. So I worked in the training section. On the green side is the non-secret side, the white side is the secret side. And if you ever look at the helicopters that the President flies in, the top of his helicopters are painted white, and those helicopters are kept behind a fence or a barricade inside of the air station compound, and that's called behind the cage. So since I was just a transition Marine, I wasn't going to work on the white side. I was green side the whole time, and I was the assistant to the training OIC, officer in charge. And it was an awesome experience to get to work with those Marines, because to work in HMX-1, you have to be recommended, you have to be talented, you have to have a great record. So I got to work with Marines who had already made awesome achievements and had this awesome opportunity to work in the squadron. And here I am, brand new, fresh out of OCS and TBS, getting, or, you know, to be around that caliber of Marine. And I think it really set me up for success. And my OIC, while I was there, he was new to HMX as well, because he's on the green side. So he was getting his clearance and all his things set up and learning to fly all the different aircraft that were there. And he said, while you're here, you need to go over to the Aero Club, which is the civilian club, and take some flight lessons. And that's absolutely what I did. And went over, got about 20 hours under my belt, and my last flight was a solo flight and a little Cessna 152. And it was awesome. That's the best advice that he could have given me. But he also sat me down several times and talked to me. And this guy is a regular, average white guy, bald head, grew up in Louisiana, would tell me stories about, you know, Haitians or blacks working in his fields, and he never felt comfortable, and he always walked around with a gun on his hip. And I'm just looking at him like, oh my God, this guy is captain in the Marine Corps, you know, is this what they're all like? And, you know, telling me how he didn't feel comfortable around other blacks, how he had to carry a gun. And one day he looked at me and he goes, Reese, I'm not going to lie to you. A couple years ago, I would have told you that you have a fair chance just like anyone else, that there is no discrimination or racism in the Marine Corps. But to be honest with you, I've seen it. I haven't experienced it, but I've seen it with the guys that I've worked with. And I wouldn't be telling you the truth, or I wouldn't be honest if I didn't say it was out there. So you're going to experience it. It's going to be hard. But it's not everywhere, and everyone isn't bad. Just do what you need to do to get where you need to be. And I really appreciated him for that bit of advice, because everybody knows it's out there, but everyone wants to be in denial too and say, oh no, everything is fair, but it's not. And for him to look me in the eye and say he knew that it wasn't, but that he knew that I could make it, was, you know, pretty awesome. So, and he said, I don't see you graduating number one, but you'll be in there, you'll do well, and you'll do good things. So, December of 99, I moved myself down to Pensacola, Florida, where I started flight school. In January, I picked up with API, and unfortunately, I cannot remember what API stands for. Some Aviation Primary Indoctrination, I believe. I'm almost positive that's what it is, because it's 6 weeks of just getting ready to start the real thing in flight school. So you're learning about aerodynamics and gas burn in an aircraft and an engine out of an aircraft, and, you know, how to do your water survival. You have to do your mile swim. And as the old myth or stereotype goes, blacks don't swim that well. Well,
I think it's the bone density thing, you know, or whatever. I don't know, but I was true to form. But I knew this. So when I got down there to API, about a month before it started up, I went over to the pool and said, okay, instructors, I already know this is my weakness. Help me here. Teach me what I need to know so I make it through this training. And they were more than willing to take me in.